James, you pick up the story and tell our listeners what's happening from your point of view.
Well, thank you for having me on once again, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure to be here. And let me just pick up from what you were saying there in your introduction, because I think you hit on a very important point that is often neglected in, of course, the mainstream media and sometimes even in the alternative media, is that really America really is already at war with Iran. It's just a low-level war at this point, and it involves not only those economic sanctions, although, of course, that's a huge part of it. And we had people like Ron Paul, when he was in Congress, was arguing that those sanctions really are tantamount to an act of war, because they do completely devastate a country's economy and their ability to provide for themselves. But also, we've of course seen the cyber attacks that have been waged on Iran with the Stuxnet virus that has now been admitted to have been created by America and Israel working in tandem in order to disrupt the Iranian nuclear program. And we've also seen the assassination of a number of Iranian nuclear scientists. And in fact, just earlier this month, we saw another assassination. The commander of an Iranian cyber warfare unit was gunned down by motorcyclists outside his home. And interestingly enough, this is the exact type of assassination that has been used on the nuclear scientists. And at the time, when one of those was shot dead pair of motorbikers on the streets of Tehran, it was noted that this is one of the preferred methods of assassination by Israel's Mossad. So again, we have another assassination taking place. And this is just part of a basically low-level warfare that's been going on for years now and has been identified at least as far back as 2007, when Seymour Hersh wrote in The New Yorker about what was happening with Iranian warfare. So it's just part of one big process.
I always look forward to Seymour's articles. He's one of the most astute observers. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, it's Monday afternoon here in the west coast of California. It's early Monday evening in the eastern part of the United States. Our guest is James Corbett. And James is an independent financial analyst, let's call him. He's not a financial advisor. He's a financial analyst. He lives in Japan. He's able to give us the perspective, not from the point of view of North America, but from what he sees worldwide, and certainly one of my favorite guests. And so we were just discussing the fact we're already at war with Iran, a low-level of war. Oh, so we're actually financing killing people in their country. We're financing cyber attacks on them. We're having efforts to put sanctions on them so they can't sell their products. We're destroying systematically their currency. And if you don't think that Iran is very soon going to make reprisals against America, I think you are incredibly naive. And when you start a war, ladies and gentlemen, you never know how it's going to end up. But James, picking up the story, and so that we'd also talked about what's happening. Certainly, Japan is massively expanding its monetary supply. It's increased its monetary supply at least 20% here in the last few months. And we're also expanding our monetary supply. We call it a quantitative easing, but it's simply a matter of simply artificially increasing the amount of money that's out there. I said they were actually not only increasing the amount of money, we're artificially keeping the interest rates low to keep the whole economy from collapsing. We're that close. And when it happens, it's going to happen. It's not a matter of if, but when. Well, most of the people who in this country are going to be impoverished, those who've done the conventional investments, and they really can't believe it could happen. But I would ask, why not? If God is just, he's going to bring justice on this country. Go right ahead, James.
Well, you're right that Japan is massively expanding its monetary base at the moment on a quest to double the monetary supply in the next two years. So that is proceeding apace, and we've seen the markets react in various ways over the past several months as bond volatility here in Japan has skyrocketed. But in the last day, today is Tuesday here across the dateline in Japan, so yesterday we saw the markets, the Nikkei index, rally on basically the back of some dumping that took place on Friday. So kind of a meaningless rally in some ways, but that just brought it back to levels that it was basically closing at on Thursday. So I think that the Japanese markets, much like the American markets right now, are in a bit of a holding pattern, waiting for the Federal Open Market Committee meeting later this week, where they are going to, supposedly announce something on Wednesday afternoon in the post-meeting press conference. Although,
hold that thought, James. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and James is simply saying that right now here in the United States, everybody's waiting to see what the Federal Reserve System is going to do on Wednesday. They're going to make an announcement. I said, are they going to continue their quantitative easing, continue their artificial low interest rates? Because actually, if they were to stop the whole house of cards, it'd come down. But, of course, you can't indefinitely continue increasing the amount of money that's out there, because eventually you build a foundation for a runaway inflation, and there's nothing more disastrous to a monetary system than inflation, because it destroys the life savings of people. It's happened over and over again, whether it be Weimar Germany, whether it would be in Zimbabwe, whether it would be in Argentina a decade ago. But we've seen it go back to ancient Greece and ancient Rome. It's happened time and time again. It happened certainly when America was initially created back certainly in 1700s. Why? Because you got into an inflationary spiral. It happened certainly in the early 1700s in France, in 1789 and 1790 again in France. It's a recurrent story, and I don't think most people even understand the dangers of rampant inflation. Do you, James?
I don't think so, because, again, this is not something that has affected most Americans for decades now, going back to the 70s, where, of course, inflation was a very real, very, very imminent problem. And I think, unfortunately, we are headed back towards those times as the top comes off of this lid that's been placed on interest rates artificially by the Federal Reserve, which is buying up the U.S. Treasuries at a blistering pace. But not only do I think that the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, will not decide to taper this week, I think that all signs going forward, if Yellen gets confirmed as Ben Bernanke's replacement, is that either the quantitative easing will merely continue as it has been under Ben Bernanke, or it will actually increase, because Yellen has been, as vice chairman of the Federal Reserve, has been one of the most vocal proponents of quantitative easing. So I think that the Federal Reserve is going to continue doing what it can to try to artificially keep down those interest rates on U.S. Treasuries. And as they do so, I mean, as this extends, I think that the other countries that are left holding the bag, basically, by buying into these treasuries, are going to start reevaluating their positions. And I think we're going to see some exits from buying U.S. government bonds. So the possibility of an auction, U.S. Treasury auction, where no one comes up, there are no buyers, is something that that has previously been absolutely unthinkable, but has entered the realm of possibility in the last few years. And we'll see if and when that eventuates. But at any rate, I think the Federal Open Market Committee is going to announce absolutely nothing this week. No change whatsoever in the quantitative easing program, which is only good news for gold. And in fact, the consensus is emerging now, even amongst the mainstream talking heads, that if and when the FOMC decides to continue with business as usual this week, gold will receive a boost from that. And we've seen gold bouncing back from its near $1,200 lows that it was hitting in July to flirt with the $1,400 mark again. It's up over $1,350 at the moment. So we'll see what happens later this week. But it's a gold-friendly forecast, depending on what the FOMC actually says.
Well, basically, as China still buying American bonds, or they're just hanging on to the ones they have, or are they actually shifting their investment in bonds? See, it's very difficult for an average person like myself, who's a trained orthopedist, certainly looking over the shoulders of people like you who are into the economy, basically to figure out what's really going on. China has been a major purchaser of American bonds. I think they have about $1.2 trillion. Japan has about $1.1 trillion, something like that, just rounded figures. China's the largest holder of our bonds. Are they still buying our treasury bonds? Are they beginning to cut back on that? Do we know?
Well, they have stopped adding to their foreign exchange reserves of U.S. dollars to the extent that they have held them in the past, and in buying bonds as well. So I think definitely there is a cutback in the amount they're buying. They're not actually selling off their reserves at this point, so they're not dumping their bonds, but they are, at any rate, not buying them in the pace that they used to. And I think that that's just another sign that China, for one, and many other countries, I think, besides, are starting to try to take a different approach when it comes to foreign exchange and the way that they facilitate their foreign trade. And of course, China is perhaps the best example of this at the moment, because it is such an important trading partner for a lot of countries these days. And we've seen over the last several years how China has repeatedly inked bilateral trade deals with so many of its trading partners that operate in the local currencies rather than in U.S. dollars, which is usually the international currency of exchange. But China has been gradually weaning itself off of that for all of its various bilateral trade deals. And that is, it's a very low-key process. It's not something that's going to make front-page headlines every time China inks a new trade deal. But it's the kind of process that adds up little by little, little by little. It starts to chip away at the dollar's preeminence in global trade. So I think that's what we have to be looking to at the moment. And obviously, I mean, if China were to dump their dollars, it would be a profound event and would have some definite ramifications. But it doesn't look like they're doing that at this particular point, although there are more and more people out there talking about the global currency reset, where exactly that process will happen. And basically, everyone will start dumping their dollars, and the last one to dump them will be the loser, because they will get the least for them. So we'll see if that process takes place. I'm not necessarily holding my breath for that, but I certainly do think this is a gradual process in which countries are basically weaning themselves off of the dollar.
Well, Sydney, we hear about all these independent trade deals that the Chinese, the so-called BRIC nations, Russia, Brazil, India, China, South Africa, and apparently they have a number of four or five other allies in their social little circle that are going to be using certainly the domestic currencies for settling accounts rather than the dollar. Is there any truth to this, or is this actually happening today? What do we know about what's really happening in the way of international finance? Are people getting away from using the dollar and the petrodollar in settlement of accounts?
Well, as I say, it's no secret that China is inking all of these bilateral trade deals, and obviously they are part of that BRICS grouping, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa grouping, which was pegged by Goldman Sachs, of all people, to be kind of that rising star of the economic world back 10 years ago. And over the proceeding 10 years, these nations really did represent a lot of the growth in the world economy. That is definitely tapering back now, and we see that basically only China is still putting up anything close to the type of growth figures that they once were. And all of the other countries in that grouping are in some degree of financial distress, and India, of course, going through a rough patch right now. So the sheen has come off of the BRICS idea to a certain extent, but they are still trying to proceed forward with various projects. And of course, the big one is the development bank that they may or may not be trying to get off the ground. They've talked about it. They've basically committed to trying to put it together. This is the idea of something like an alternative to the World Bank, issuing loans or interest-free or low-interest loans to developing countries that are provided by the BRICS countries themselves rather than the World Bank. And this is supposed to be a bank that's going to be capitalized with $100 billion, or at least that's what they're saying. And supposedly this is going to come from equal contributions, or at the very least, somewhat equal contributions by the five BRICS partners. But everyone's thinking that perhaps China is going to step up and perhaps capitalize half of the bank, and then the other four will capitalize the other half, something like that. So far, however, that hasn't really materialized. People were expecting that at the BRICS summit earlier this year, but it didn't really come together. So that's in a bit of a holding pattern. And we'll see. I think the global economy is not in the sort of state that it was 10 years ago that allowed for all of that growth of the developing countries. And it seems that definitely The shine has come off the BRICS idea, as I said, and even China, of course, is now just posting its completely fictitious GDP numbers with projected 7.5% growth this year. But really, it's kind of a random number generator that's happening in China right now, so I wouldn't take those numbers as gospel truth.
Basically, what you're saying is they say that they have about a 5% growth. And do you think this may be a gross overstatement or not?
Right. They say that it will be 7.5% this year.
Oh, 7.5%.
But yes, I think that is an overstatement. And I think that that can be seen, the reality of what's going on in China can be seen in, for example, in the property prices in Beijing, in Shanghai, in a couple of the other major cities where they're really skyrocketing in recent months. And I think that this is due to a number of factors, but one of them is that the Chinese central bank and the government is attempting to clamp down on capital right now in China. And to try to stave off of the property boom, they're trying to clamp down on the ways that people can use their capital and the ways that they can use it specifically on real estate. And we're starting to see that spill over now. For example, we just saw a Chinese industrial giant Fosun buy Chase Manhattan Plaza from J.P. Morgan for, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of $750 million, which is a pretty prime piece of real estate. And I think rather than something that we can see make some sort of economic sense for Fosun, I think it's really just a way for them to put their dollars somewhere relatively safe overseas while the Chinese government is attempting to clamp down on some of the activities in their own domestic market to try to keep prices down.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is certainly, if you'd like to give us a call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And basically, of course, we're being told certainly the economy is doing fine, but is the economy here in the United States really doing fine? And suddenly they tell us, oh, yes, look at those falling unemployment rates. Well, of course, that's because so many people are suddenly being cut back and are only working part-time now because of the Obamacare, and so basically they're working 30 hours a week. They actually can't even certainly support themselves on that, but of course now at least they're employed. But of course, as you look at these certainly the figures that they're putting out, basically they tell us things are getting better, they tell us but they use the U2 unemployment instead of the U6 unemployment. Look at the U6 unemployment figures, Bureau of Labor Statistics, you find it's up over 14%. Why are they lying to us? Well, why would you think they wouldn't lie to us? Americans are just so gullible. Well, James, certainly, what do you think as far as the American economy is concerned? We're being told that things are getting better, that the unemployment rate is falling. Is that a valid figure, or certainly is my estimate of that more correct, that basically what we're seeing are totally altered figures because of so many people are just going on to part-time work?
Well, unfortunately, your figures are much more accurate than the official government ones, and that is unfortunate because, of course, it would be great to believe that unemployment really was down around 7% or whatever they say these days. Unfortunately, exactly as you indicate, those numbers are more or less made up. They're completely fudged at any rate, and that they do not include anyone who has been out of work for a certain period of time and who has become a discouraged worker, basically just gets taken off the rolls of the unemployment. So, of course, when you look at the actual employment rate, i.e. the number of Americans of working age who have full-time employment, you can see that number is much closer to what the truth is, and that number has been dropping throughout the last several years. So we've had this so-called jobless recovery. And unfortunately, I think that this is the real picture of the American economy, and probably the one that people out there in the listening audience can relate to the most, because this is what the economy actually looks like to the average person. It matters if you have a job or not and what kind of job you have, much more than all of these phony baloney fake numbers that they throw around about GDP and things of that sort, which generally have nothing to do with the average worker's position and condition. So I think that unfortunately we are living through some some pretty rough economic times that are not being portrayed in the media because the media is hyping all of these government numbers. And I think that people can see that disconnection. And hopefully more and more people are seeing that disconnection and deciding that they don't want to listen to those mainstream talking heads anymore and are seeking out alternative information. But unfortunately, I'm sure many are still trapped in that matrix because they just don't know the way out of it. So unfortunately, we have arrived at that situation, and it's not going to be helped, I think, by the appointment of Janet Yellen as Federal Reserve Chair. She still has to be appointed, confirmed by the Senate, and that could be interesting as Senator Rand Paul is now threatening to basically filibuster her appointment unless and until the audit the Federal Reserve bill is actually passed. So we'll see. We'll see if that amounts to anything. I'm not holding my breath that it will, but certainly it would be nice to see something like that actually happen to at least derail these Federal Reserve plans a little bit.
All right, fine. Well, now, basically, what is anything new as far as Europe is concerned? Are they suddenly just struggling along? Certainly the southern countries there, certainly Italy and Portugal and Spain, and certainly Corsica, and I think there's one other there, Greece, of course. What's happening to them? Are they coming out of their recession, or are they simply covering this up? Are they certainly financially unstable, as many people are concerned, and basically because they should be getting out of the European Union so they can certainly control their own monetary system rather than have it controlled by the EU. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, unfortunately, they are, I think, still mired in the depths of this Eurozone disaster that's happening right now. And we can see that from some new unemployment numbers that just came out showing that unemployment was holding at 12% in September, which is part of the Euro currency bloc's largest ever recession. So absolutely, there's no sign of improvement whatsoever coming out of Europe at the moment, and no sign of change on the horizon either.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. We have different numbers for each one of our programs. We have three different programs every day. And then, of course, we have different numbers to call in and different numbers for our guests. But anyway, if you'd like to call and talk to James, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly James is simply saying that things certainly don't look very good over in Europe for the so-called southern countries over there, certainly the Greece, Corsica, Spain, Italy, certainly the four nations there in the southern part of Europe that are really having real financial problems and certainly no real end to this difficulty. What about Germany? Certainly, is Germany economy doing well? Certainly, the Germans are hardworking people. They're much more productive. But certainly, is Germany certainly doing well financially, or even they mired somewhat in recession?
Well, they're at the very least, they're doing better than their neighbors, and we can say that with some definitiveness. Those same unemployment numbers that just came out for the Eurozone showing, for example, Italy reaching its highest ever unemployment records of 12.3% show that Germany is about half of that, down towards 6.9%. So Germany is certainly doing better than its neighbors, but it is once again just contributing to that state of affairs where the average German worker thinks that they are basically supporting the Eurozone on their back. And in many ways, perhaps they are. I mean, Germany is certainly in the driver's seat of that Eurozone bloc and has been for some time. So what Chancellor Merkel and the German parliament decides is what tends to happen in the Eurozone. And I don't see that changing anytime soon either. That's basically the power dynamic of what's going on. And how anyone in Italy or Greece or Spain could ultimately think that this is in their best interests is beyond me. But I think we are seeing that rising awareness that basically the Eurozone was a bill of goods that was sold to the people that has not delivered. And it's only a question of if and when the people decide to take it back to the store that they purchased it from and try to get a refund, i.e. the breakup of the Eurozone. And that's not any time, I think, in the near future, not certainly not within the next few months, but I think that is something that we could see as a possibility as this crisis deepens.
Well, I think it's important for our listeners to see the overview of what's really going on. So people who want a world government, and basically their plan is to have a United States of America, United States of North America, combining Canada and Mexico and the United States. Then they want a United States of Europe, a United States of Africa, a United States of the Middle East, a United States certainly of Asia, and then, of course, the Pacific Rim nations, the United States of South America. There's a long-range plan. That's what's really going on. The average individual doesn't understand that people are doing this. Their loyalty is not to the individual, a nation, to their nation, but it is this globalist dream of a one-world government, a one-world economic system, certainly a one-world religion, and it all ties into the destruction of Christianity. When you understand that, you can understand so much of what's going on today. You will never hear this mentioned, of course, in the conventional media. But, of course, these people are working within the financial system. They want a United States of Europe, and this really isn't to the advantage of the other people, certainly in either Northern or Southern Europe, is it, James?
No, I think you're, unfortunately, again, you're exactly right that this is part of the much bigger agenda towards global government. But I think it's the people are hampered by their lack of imagination and their lack of ability to even imagine that there is a larger plan towards what's going on. People see each story coming out piece by piece and sort of evaluate their viewpoint of the world based on these individual pieces of information without really looking at the way that these pieces connect into a bigger picture. So, I mean, just as one tiny example coming out of the Eurozone recently, we saw that Mario Draghi is now calling for an increased ECB, European Central Bank, oversight powers in a body that they're starting to iron out right now. Basically, a bank failure agreement is on the table right now for the European Union, so that if and when something like Cyprus happens again, there will be a coordinated European Union response. And Mario Draghi, the president of the European Central Bank, is right now trying to iron out that agreement and try to get more power for the European Central Bank itself. So we might take a look at an individual story like that, for example, and just see sort of see that story in isolation. But if we compare it to the bigger picture and how people in the know have been talking about for years and years now, basically since the beginning of the Eurozone, that this is the ultimate aim, is to try to create a single central bank with a single currency towards the creation of a single government, I think we can see that this is just part of that bigger plan. And I think we have to keep our eye on that bigger picture in order to really understand what's going to happen, because unfortunately...
I'm going to have to interrupt you. We're going to a break. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And we've got Dallas, David from Dallas on the line. We'll get to him in just a moment. When we get back from this temporary break, hang on there. Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful. From Dallas, how are you? Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I heard Mr. Corbett speaking on another Genesis program about 9/11.
David, you're not coming through. Are you on a cell phone or what?
I'm afraid so, and I'm in my car.
Okay, fine. Well, go ahead.
Mr. Corbett, nice to speak with you, by the way. Has anybody, with regard to evaluating controlled demolition of the tower, has anyone attempted to, say, reverse engineer and find out, do an estimate of summaries and quantities? You know, I'm going to need this many miles of this particular type of cabling. I'm going to need this many tons of nanothermite. And these are not household items either.
I'm sorry, David, what are you specifically speaking of? What are these items?
Well, you know, like whatever it takes to control demolition of those towers. I mean, you have to buy the large bulk quantity. And whoever makes these things, there's probably only a half a dozen companies in the world that make nanothermite or make controlled demolition asbestos. I mean, I think that it could be investigated to find out who ordered what when, who had it made, and...
Are you talking about some sort of an explosive one?
Well, all the nanothermite is...
Nanothermite, okay. Suddenly, James, do you know anything at all about nanothermite? Is that in your field of expertise?
Well, not my field of expertise, I would say, but I have certainly looked into the issue. I would say that the best and most thorough information on this is coming from Kevin Ryan, who was the Underwriter Laboratories whistleblower, who left Underwriter Laboratories after they continued to falsify their reports about the steel in World Trade Center. And he has done some exceptionally thorough reports, not only on nanothermite and how it may have been used in the demolition, but in fact in the connections between some of the people involved with the development of nanothermite and government agencies like NIST, which then went on to rubber stamp the reports of what happened at the World Trade Center. So I would turn to Kevin Ryan and researchers like that for the information. As to how much nanothermite might have been needed, that's beyond my field of research, but I'm sure that there have been estimates made by people like Kevin Ryan and Stephen Jones and others.
All right, fine. David, does that answer your question at all?
And Mr. Colbert,
Hold that thought for a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett, the Sydney from Japan, and Sydney, he's a Canadian living in Japan, and certainly giving us an international perspective of what's going on financially. We have David calling from Dallas asking about how people who manufacture nanothermite, because, of course, the nanothermite was used, certainly, in the destruction of both the World Trade Center and Building Number 7. And it's a little off subject, but that is only James Corbett had some suggestions as to people who might be able to answer that. But certainly we need to be very, very concerned about some of these things that have happened in the past. They killed almost 3,000 Americans suddenly on September 11, 2001. And that was controlled demolition, ladies and gentlemen. Watch Building 7 come down. Watch Building 7 come down. You can see it on the internet. They had all of these video cameras on Building 7. Why would they have at least three or four separate cameras on Building 7 at 5:20 in the afternoon after the Twin Towers had come down? Well, they'd have them there. It's great to see it. It's a controlled demolition. Watch the center of the roof collapse first and the base of the building goes. Controlled demolition. And that means they killed all those people that day. David, did you have something else you wanted to say before we let you go?
Yes, just a quick one. Bill Salente is forecasting darker times by the time we hit the end of the second quarter, and I want next year, and I wondered what Mr. Forbes' comments would be on.
And what does Mr. Salente say is going to happen by the second quarter?
He's predicting a much darker time. It could be the domino that might just start it all.
All right, sort of a general collapse. Okay, thank you very much, David. I'm going to let you go because we've got a poor connection. Next time, I hope we can get you better at telephone. Thanks very much. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. And for those of you who don't know, Mr. Corbett is certainly a financial analyst, I suppose, who has made a prediction that things are going to start falling apart by the second quarter of the year 2014. Do you have any comments one way or the other, James, or do you want to get on that slippery log?
Right. Just to be clear, you said Mr. Corbett there. You meant Mr. Salente. But yes, Gerald Salente.
Mr. Salente, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's right. Well, I can't really comment on his prediction specifically because I haven't heard it, but I have heard similar predictions before by lots of people in this field. And all of them that I've heard have failed to come true. So I definitely take those pronouncements that something's going to happen by such and such date with a huge grain of salt. And I don't make any of my preparations based on those types of pronouncements. All I can say is that we see the general trend in which things are going, and we should be preparing for that trend. And whether or not it happens by the second quarter of next year, or the first quarter of next year, or the fourth quarter, or another year entirely, I'll just leave to the events as they unfold. And I think we should just be preparing in the meantime while we have this opportunity.
And I agree with that. We don't know what's going to happen. I'm very concerned about a war with Iran. I just don't know when it's going to happen. All we want to know is that there's a good possibility there will be one. All we need to know is there's a very real possibility there's going to be a real financial cataclysm coming up very, very soon, but we're going to have to wait and see when it is. And I think it's always a mistake to give a date because, of course, if it doesn't come due at that time, why, of course, then you look very bad. If it does, why, people soon forget your prophecy. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And before we go on, James, would you like to tell our listeners how they can subscribe to the International Forecaster? James writes the editorial there, the lead editorial, twice a week for the International Forecaster. And then how they can get in touch with you and get your own publications. Go right ahead.
Absolutely. Well, if people are interested in the International Forecaster, it is a weekly newsletter. In fact, a biweekly newsletter. It comes out twice a week and has about 30 to 40 pages of information. Not only my editorial, but lots of other articles and links to information besides. So I think it is a valuable resource on matters economic, political, geopolitical, social, and otherwise. People can find out more information about it at theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And there you can find not only some of my previous editorials, but other articles there for your perusal. And you can also sign up for a free introductory copy if it's your first time to subscribe. You can also subscribe to the newsletter right there on the website. If you'd prefer to do it by mail, you can write into P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. And people who are interested in contacting myself or seeing some of my own work, I'm at CorbettReport.com. Again, one word, Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. And there you can find more information about myself and some of my work that I've done in the past.
All right, fine. And let's see, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment for us, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But we're living in very uncertain times financially as far as the international markets are concerned. Certainly, the United States economy is being kept up by massive infusions of wealth. They're talking about $85 billion a month, about $1 trillion a year. Remember, it took us almost 200 years to accumulate debt of $1 trillion. We actually do that on a yearly basis now, $1.5 trillion a year. Certainly, Barack Hussein Obama, when he became the president, the national debt was $10.7 trillion. Now it's well over $17 trillion in less than 5 years. That's quite an accomplishment to work so effectively to destroy the financial infrastructure of our country. And certainly with the help of the people who put Barack Obama in power, they're in the process of doing this. And basically, if they stop increasing the amount of money out there, they stop something they call it quantitative easing. It's just simply a convenient name to confuse you. Basically, they're simply pouring money into the economy. Then, of course, they're paying the banks interest so that they don't actually put this money into the economy and create galloping consumption and inflation. But it's coming. It's not a matter of if. I just don't know when it's going to happen. But heaven help the average investor. What would happen, certainly, if we went to 8 or 10% inflation at this time, James? How would you see this unfolding? And what would it do to the life savings of our people?
Well, 8 or 10% interest. Were we talking interest or inflation?
Inflation.
Okay. Well, absolutely. Well, unfortunately, we are at a much higher level of inflation than the official numbers state, because again, those are manipulated by carefully choosing what goes into the basket and what doesn't when they calculate the inflation prices. But at any rate, if we were to see inflation triple or quadruple from where it is now, absolutely, that would be hitting the average American's pocketbook very hard. And this is again the type of thing that, on the bigger scale of the GDP and all these big numbers that they like to throw around, it doesn't seem significant. But when you break it down to the level of the individual person trying to just buy enough to make ends meet on a monthly basis, it can really hurt to have a rise in food prices or fuel prices or things of that nature. So something that unfortunately we have to keep in mind is that there are vast numbers of people not only receiving various government handouts, but of course now 47 million families on some form of food stamps. And on November 1st, their aid is going to be cut by the government. That's going to be actually reduced as part of these reforms that are going on right now. So we're going to see a lot of people suddenly getting hit in the pocketbook there. And then when Obamacare starts kicking in earnest next year, a lot of people are going to be finding their healthcare rates rising to basically unsustainable levels. So there's a couple of big things coming up for a lot of American consumers out there, which does not bode well for the overall economy, or of course for the plight of the average person.
I certainly agree. Well, let's go to Bruce, who's calling from Durand, Michigan, and we've got Carolyn on the line. She's calling from Washington. If you're out there, you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. And Bruce, how are you doing?
Okay, getting over a pneumonitis tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, but basically, so many people have got the flu bug, and basically, of course, it's so important that you have some of the herbs and things that you, when you first start coming down, to try to abort it. But we won't talk about health. I'm sure you're here to talk about finance. So do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. How much do we depend on Saudi Arabia, and is it feasible to flip from a rapprochement with Saudi Arabia to one with Iran and just say goodbye to the Saudis and be friends with the Iranians? Is that happening, and are the Saudis getting angrier and angrier?
That's a very perceptive question, and in fact, that's exactly what I'm going to be writing about in the International Forecaster coming up this weekend. I do see that this type of flip, if not actually happening at the moment, could conceivably happen, and we actually saw Saudi Arabia go through some very interesting diplomatic motions over the past week or two, basically telling their European diplomatic counterparts that they're going to start basically extricating themselves from their relationship with the United States. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable thing to have happen. And supposedly this is all about Iran, and they're unhappy with the fact that America is even going to think about starting to perhaps maybe talk with Iran rather than just bomb them to smithereens. And Saudi Arabia was upset that America didn't go bombs blazing into Syria and other things like that. But I think that part of what this is really about is the idea that America is gaining energy independence because of shale oil and things like that, which are really changing the game in terms of the oil markets and do represent a rift in the decades-long, nearly century-long relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. So I think that relationship is changing right now, and it remains to be seen whether or not there will be that kind of rift. And I think we have a long way to go before America actually just replaces Saudi Arabia with someone like Iran. I think there's a lot that would have to take place in the meantime. But certainly there is a change happening in their relations right now, and I am going to be writing about that more specifically this weekend in the Forecaster.
Okay, anything else, Bruce?
Yeah, is there something like natural gas that Iran has that Saudi Arabia doesn't?
There's not particularly that they have that no one else does, but certainly there is the Iranian Pars gas field, which is one of the largest on the planet and is a prime resource, or is seen that way, of course, by geopolitically. So they definitely have not and basically cannot tap into the riches of that resource unless and until they get the sanctions lifted and start basically being included more in some of these international agreements. So I think that might be something that could be on the table when it comes to America's relations with Iran. But again, we have to keep in mind that America is less and less dependent on foreign oil at the moment because of the shale oil and other such things that are taking place right now.
And Bruce, I think you have to understand that certainly until recently, Russia was the largest producer of oil and natural gas in the world. And of course, this is because we went over there and drilled all the wells for them, but we're never going to tell the American people. But certainly within the last few months, why America, at least my understanding, has become the largest producer of oil and of natural gas in the world. You're not going to hear a lot of these things because, of course, the media is controlled. But everything is changing and changing dramatically.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, I was thinking for the longest time, probably for the last 2 or 3 years, that it would be a Japan scenario, World War II. You know, we build up the enemy in Iran and destroy it. What if it's like a World War I scenario? Could Saudi Arabia and Israel drag us all into a World War I kind of thing with Iran?
Well, I think we are going to war with Iran. You heard my remarks, and we'll be talking more about that in some of other programs. But the average individual really doesn't understand what's really going on behind the scenes because it's being covered up by the media. But I fear that we will be at war with Iran in a relatively short period of time. And if that happens, pray for America. Okay, anything else, Bruce, before we let you go?
Oh, I've listened to a guy on he must be CFR. You ever hear a guy named Sick? Gary, I think it is Sick, S-I-C-K. He was in the State Department, I believe, under Clinton.
Doesn't ring a bell. Know anything about him, James?
I can't say he rings a bell with me either.
Okay, fine.
He was talking about the various personalities in Iran. I watched him Sunday. And they're not as extreme now as they used to be. I'm wondering how far our rapprochement with Iran will go. I'm really thinking that there's something like a flip coming.
Well, but Bruce, let me just point out that if you go back, and I'm old enough to remember, suddenly in December of 1941, suddenly the Japanese diplomats were in Washington, D.C. We were working with them for peace. We were going to have peace breaking out at any time. And then came December 7th. God bless. Thanks. Let's go to Carolyn calling from Washington. Hi, Carolyn. Do you have a question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, I do. Thank you. I thought some Bible prophecy says that Europe will be united, as in the old Roman Empire, and your guest says they're getting ready to break up again. So how does that fit?
Do you have any comments on that, James? Carolyn is anticipating we're going to see the fulfillment of prophecy, and yet, of course, you're suggesting that Europe is going to break up. How does that fit with prophecy, or does it?
Well, to be clear, I think that Europe has a choice to make whether or not they're going to break up, and unfortunately, all of the political pressure is to further union, to further bring it into that European Union, and I think a lot of the people are starting to resist that agenda, but is it enough? Will it work? That's really to be decided. And I think that there's the possibility that it could fall apart under its own weight. But at this point, they're going to try to fail forward and try to bring it into a closer union. So I think that the political pressure is towards the formation of a centralized European bank and a centralized European government, a centralized one European currency.
And I believe that's absolutely right, Carolyn. Remember, God has a plan, man has a plan. And basically, I think eventually God's plan for what's happening in his prophecies will come to pass. We just don't know when or exactly how. But I think we live in exciting times, especially when you have a personal relationship with our Lord. Okay?
Yeah. Can I ask about China?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I read an article about 2 months ago where the Chinese government is forcing the peasants off the land, putting them in these new towns, cities they've built. Whether they want to or not, they're forced to go in there and then hopefully find a job. A lot of them are very depressed, commit suicide. But they're getting them off the land, so if the Chinese are building underground places for them, like they say Russia and our government is doing for ourselves, why would they put them in these cities to stick up if this Niebuhr was coming?
Well, I don't have any thoughts on that. Do you have any thoughts on that, James?
Well, I can say that China is undergoing one of the most remarkable demographic transitions in history. They're now attempting to move 250 million rural inhabitants into some of these cities and in some of the cities that they've created for this purpose. And people can go online and look at some of the videos that have come out about these basically cities that have been created where there's almost no inhabitants whatsoever at this point. And they're going to start transitioning a quarter of a billion people into these cities over the course of the next decade. So it's a remarkable transformation that's happening right now in China. As to underground bunkers and things of that nature, that's beyond my purview. I don't really know about that. But I think it's going to be extremely interesting to watch how China handles this transition and what ultimately results from it.
Carol, I suspect they have their underground facilities in those cities. I think that certainly they have a fabulous system of tunnels all over China. They want to protect their people. It's simply that our leaders don't want to protect us. We have to ask why. God bless. Thanks for calling. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up the program. Well, James, the hour flies by as it always does. We always enjoy having you with us so very much. Do you have any parting thoughts before we let you go?
Well, I guess we've talked a couple of times now about some of the things that could happen in the near future, talking about an Iranian war or talking about the breakup or the further coming together of something like the European Union. And I just want to stress once again that these things are still up in the air at this point, and there are still progress that could be made if people do understand what's happening and to break free of the conditioning of the mainstream and what the politicians and others are telling them to do. So I just like to end on something of a positive note that we still can actually, I think, change the direction of things and hopefully turn things around. We can achieve the reprieve of Nineveh or something along those lines if we are serious about it and if we dedicate ourselves to finding out the truth about what's going on. So I hope that people out there will continue to look into this information for themselves. I never ask people to take what I'm saying for at face value. Always look into it for yourself. Always confirm what you're hearing from others. And I think that ultimately we can start turning this around if we apply ourselves to the real solutions that present themselves in this really remarkable time that we're living in. I mean, a lot of things can be said about what's happening right now, but you certainly can't say it's boring. So I'm looking forward to going through them again with you next week.
All right, God bless, and thanks very much. And we'll talk to you again next week at the same time.
Take care.
Bye-bye.